Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travelled to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast would not happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to become a socio, to become one of our members, and get an extra big interview every month, plus loads of bonus content. So go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter, patreon.com/Graham Hunter, and we'll bring you joy.
During World Cup 1978, yeah, here's a clue, soccer fans. I was 14. And for the winning team, Argentina, there were three players that stood out for me. Leopoldo Luque, Mario Kempes, and Osvaldo Ardiles. He was my early, early introduction to what would become the glories of Iniesta and Xavi. Didn't know why he stood out to me so much, but in the bike shed at the old Cults Academy, when we were playing World Cup with a tennis ball, two guys against two guys against two guys, and a keeper, first to score goes through. When we smacked that tennis ball past the keeper, Ardiles was the name we were shouting out then. Certainly I was. First time I met Ozzy Ardiles, quite some significant time later, I found out he was one of the few men in the world who swear as much as I do and as gleefully as I do. I don't care what people say about how I speak about my guests. I choose them with affection and wisdom. I choose them because largely I think they'll bring you great stories and tell them well. But I adore Ozzy. World Cup winner. I think the first World Cup winner on this series. Is that right, people? Tell me. Help me. Ozzy, yeah, everybody's going to remember him for his cheeky skills, his cheeky grit and his toughness. When Mickey Hazard was recently in Barcelona speaking to Spurs fans on stage, he was asked, who would you immediately take one player from your era into the modern Spurs? And he didn't choose Glenn Hoddle, who he thinks the world of. He chose Ozzy Ardiles. Ozzy Ardiles, you'll remember for, Ozzy's going to Wembley, his knees have gone all trembly. But the young Ozzy Ardiles, did you know he was in the Argentinian RAF? Did you know that while he was at university studying to be a lawyer, friends of his who protested democratic values disappeared? And that means they were taken, tortured and killed. Why wasn't he one of them? Who was his infamous father-in-law? What was the World Cup like? Why did he nearly not play in the World Cup final? And when he did, why was there a massive, massive risk to his health and well-being and maybe even his eventual freedom? Who knows? There are stories galore in this episode with the mighty Osvaldo Ardiles. I am fortunate enough to know and be friends with his tremendously talented son. There'll be very poignant descriptions of Ozzy's time in the UK during the Falklands War, why he had to leave, what that felt like, and the loss of his cousin, who was the first of the Argentinian casualties during the Falklands War. Maybe not everybody will agree with everything that's said in this episode, but I guarantee you, you will see and understand a different side of Osvaldo Ardiles, Spurs legend, yes, manager in several different continents, world champion for Argentina. Stay tuned, this is a special episode. Today, big interview listeners, we're in the heart of London. It's grey outside, but there's a little ray of sunshine sitting about half a metre away from me. It's the man whose name I used to shout out when I scored a goal in World Cup football in the concrete of Cults Academy in 1978. We have with us the majestic Osvaldo Ardiles. Ozzy, good morning.
Good morning. And the weather is pretty bad outside, but I hope that this interview is going to be a lot better.
That's a code for what the hell am I doing here?
Well, yes, this is exactly when I was walking toward this place, I was thinking, what the bloody hell I am doing here?
What have I let myself into?
We will see.
One of the bad things about life, Ozzy, is that we get older and people, young people come along. I hate them.
Yes.
But for their benefit, because I know what kind of footballer you are, take away your humility and tell the truth about the kid who played on television in baby football at 12 in Cordoba, the guy who played brilliantly for La Gloria, who came to Spurs, etc., etc. Describe what made you, a world-class footballer.
I would have to say that the main factor has been luck. Is this a simple... Oh, it is luck. I mean, when I said that, I have a kind of theory that everything in life is luck. Because I was born in a house... I was born in a country that it was football crazy all the time. I was born with a kind of coordination between my mind and my legs, my body in general, but especially my legs. And in a place like Argentina, I have to be a football player. It's as simple as that. Luck, because I never had suffered any very bad injury. Luck, because I survived one or two accidents that could very easily cost my life. Luck, because my father was a lawyer. That means that every day I eat a piece of steak, for example, because in Argentina we all, if you don't eat a steak, it's like you have not eaten. So every day I would have a piece of steak and with potatoes and spaghetti, whatever it is. So all this, when you put all this into the mixer, it's very, very clearly it's luck.
You see, whenever you tolerated me at Revista de la Liga, and particularly on the nights out, and you did tolerate me because you were very generous, we always ended up in some kind of friendly argument or other. And I have to argue right now, you haven't told the truth. You said you had to be a footballer. Your dad did not want you to be a footballer.
No, not at all. No. My dad was one of the very, very few Argentinian people that did not like football, in fact. He didn't want to see me play. He was all the time afraid that I was going to be hurt, especially because we were four brothers. I am the third one, and my two older brothers, especially my second brother, always took me to kind of very funny places, poor places, because the football was much, much better. It was a proper challenge there for me. So it was very, very tough. And of course, my father was not happy that I was playing there.
Because your dad was a lawyer.
Yes. So my father, as you know, I study law. My oldest brother is a lawyer. And but I was playing, and very naturally, I was quite good.
What kind of lawyer would you have been?
I think I would have been more the lawyer. I would have been a judge, probably. When I studied law, I didn't want to be so much a lawyer, but much, much more a judge. Perry Mason, you remember Perry Mason?
Of course I remember Perry Mason. I'm older than him.
Yes. No, you're not. And Perry Mason was my idol in television and so on. So I always feel that I thought that they were going to be like
I can imagine you in court, and I can imagine you winning. But the thing about being a judge, was that about justice or was that about authority? Or did you like the nice robes?
No. It's about justice. It's about the principle. It's about the... Yes, no. It's not about, of course, you're a judge, you're going to be very high in there. But it was not because of that, no. My father, after... He was a very, very humble man as well. He was never in the pursuit of money, for example. Money in my house was a kind of a bad word. We never, ever, ever talk about money. My father would never allow to talk about money. But coming back to football, little by little I was playing football. I knew I was very good. No false modesty here.
No, to tell the truth, because yes. We want people who didn't have the privilege of seeing you to understand.
Yes. Some people always... I've been asked who discovered you. Well, nobody discovered me, or everybody discovered me. I mean, everybody knew I was going to be very, very good. And the baby question was because I was very small. I was very small, and so the baby question was, yes, you're brilliant, but are you going to be able to play the first team? Football in Argentina was pretty cynical at the time, and so on. But little by little, I went there.
You're the same height as Di Stefano, for example.
Yes.
And growing up, I don't know how much his games were televised, but how aware were you of Di Stefano?
No, not at all. I knew Di Stefano, Alfredo Di Stefano, after, yes, and I shake hands with him, and of course, when I knew all his accomplishments, brilliant. But the people I admire, you're talking about the 66 World Cup, for example, in England. This is the first one that I saw in television, so doesn't look good for an Argentinian, but I will say it anyway. But my idol was Pelé, of course. And I always fight in talking with the people, talking about football and so on. Because I was very, very pro-Brazilian in my makeup. You compare the Argentinian football and the Brazilian football, Brazil is more samba, Argentina is more tango. So we are much more tough, and samba Brazil is kind of, we just play and so on.
Fluid.
Fluid and beautiful football and so on.
In 66 in Argentina, saying you were pro-Pelé or pro-Brazil, that was a little bit dangerous. Because the rivalry is very serious.
Yes. Sure. Not dangerous in the way that somebody was going to hit me or anything, but... Some people say, how can you? How can you support Brazil? It's not that I support Brazil, but I'm very sorry, but I absolutely love great football. 1970 going forward a little bit more, that I knew a little bit more, was my favorite team of all time, the Brazil of 1970, World Cup champion, when they play with 10 number 10s in the side. Jairzinho,
that's a great expression.
Costao.
I've never heard that expression.
Yeah, they were number 10.
I've never heard it before, but it's a beautiful expression.
They were, well, you know what it means.
I do.
To be number 10. So all these players, they were number 10 in their own team.
Who was the real number 10 for them then? Not the number. Tostão?
Tostão, in the World Cup, he played with the number 9. But in fact, he was more the number 10. The brain behind all this thing. But it was Jairzinho, Tostão, Pelé, Rivelinho. Oh, Gerson. Jairzinho, Gerson, Tostão, Pelé, and Rivelinho. Say no more.
Not bad.
And then the other midfield, the defensive midfield in inverted commas, was Clodoaldo. That was another wonderful, wonderful player.
Yeah.
Again, when I started to play football, being a kid, so the challenge was to go. It was a shanty town, not far from my
house. This is where your brother took you, to the shanty town.
Yes.
Is this Football Potrero that we're talking about?
Yes. Well, I mean, you see the pitches there, they were awful. Funny enough, for example, my two oldest brothers, they could not come into the shanty town. No, because they're... You arrive with the Nike shoes or some kind of... No, nobody will hit you, nothing, but they will take everything from you. I mean,
they will take it.
Oh, they take it. You cannot go with the bicycle, they will take the bicycle. Of course, they go without saying. And if you receipt and so on, they will give you a pom-pom and they will take it anyway. Funny enough, I could go there.
Why?
Because I was a good football player. It was this kind of respect. So I come inside the house and, yeah, no problem. And some of the boys, I took them home, we play, and after that, come into my house and so on. And my poor mother, they will give him a sandwich or something to eat, and tea, coffee, whatever it was, or chocolate, and yeah. But football gave me this kind of protection.
It's funny because it isn't just talent that allowed you to be in the shanty town. I think that we're going to come on to this theme in a minute, because I actually do plan these interviews. You may not notice, but we do plan it a little bit. You're tough. You know, for all that you're born bright,
intelligent, born talented, born to a good family, you know, smart parents, good parents. You're a tough man. So being in the Barrio Potrero or whatever, simple talent alone, you're a little guy. So whether you're talented or not, they could have picked on you. But I think you are born innately with a tough mentality, tough personality.
In the football game, coming to play the football game, of course, I mean, they were very, very tough. They would not give me kind of special... They will give me special attention, meaning they will try to kick me, yes, of course. So I learned a lot. I mean, I learned how to defend myself. I never have a bad injury. My first injury, in fact, was when I was 30 years old. A silly one, we maybe come later on to that, and played against Manchester City, blah, blah, blah. But it was, I never had any injuries, because playing in that kind of situation, then it gave me the ability to jump when the tackle was coming, to anticipate very, very... I used to think, for example, that was later on in life, for example, if I am playing with a guy that, say, in England, definitely they will come for me if they can put me in the stand. They will do it because, I mean, it's a big, big advantage for them.
It was also pretty much allowed then.
It was.
Más o menos. The referees, they gave the guys who came looking for you two or three goes, and then they would say, okay, enough.
Exactly. The first 5 or 10 minutes, they was kind of licensed to kill. It was as simple as that. I mean, I knew. So if somebody come, if somebody heard me say, I always thought, well, it's not because they did it or they are brilliant. No, it was my fault because I allowed them to be close enough. I had to read the situation. I had to read the situation and not allow them to give them the chance to kick me, to put me out in the stand.
I understand. It's a strong point of view.
Yeah.
Because it's really their fault. But your awareness.
It is.
And I was going to come to that.
I wish I was playing now. With the amount of protection right now.
You'd play forever. Ooh. You'd have 35 assists per season.
Exactly.
Probably 10 goals.
Yes, no problem, easy.
But given that you didn't play
not
now...
Not to mention I will be a lot richer.
You would be a lot richer.
No problem.
And a couple World Cups
That is another luck. This is how when I think about luck and so on. If I was born 20 years later, I will be a lot richer than I am right now. As simple as that. When I was born, say 20 years before, I will be very poor, or I will be quite poor. Again, that is 100% luck. This is in the way I look at luck.
It's a great way to find peace in life, to not just accept, but to assess and say, I recognise the good things.
Yes.
I need to ask you, Ozzy, because I think it's important to your story. I think your mum's dad was chief of police. Your wife's dad, was chief of police.
Yes.
And Cordoba, in those days, was quite an interesting place. What kind of city were you growing up in? It's a very beautiful city.
Yep.
But in those days, I think it was a city full of risk, full of conflict.
Yes.
Try to make people understand what was going on around you in Cordoba.
Well, that was the time you're talking about early 70s, 71, 72, 73, and so on. I made my debut in the first team, 69. I was 17 years old. I was pretty famous because that came from being...
This is Instituto La Gloria,
Instituto,
no?
Instituto La Gloria in Cordoba, yes. Very nice club. Again, I was born in a place called Juniors, General Paz Juniors, and it's very affluent, and I was a member of the club. This club, Juniors, was the best club in Cordoba. It was brilliant. It was number one in everything, in basketball, in swimming. It had everything. They have like Real Madrid, so they have everything and so on. So it was the best club in Cordoba. My father made me... So I lived there. I lived there every day, and so on. I was there. They were not the number one in football, crucially. So when I had to sign, I was 13 years old and I started to play more serious football, I went to sign for Instituto. That in football was better than juniors, but nowhere near as a club. The people in juniors, they were not happy at all. There was in a way, I was the cream of the cream, say, and suddenly, hello, thank you, bye-bye.
Goodbye.
But again, the decision was not a difficult one. It was a football decision. It was a football decision. Basically, in junior, I will play with my kind of little posh friends. They are very good, they're very nice, no problem. But the other was a real, real challenge. I mean, they were much tougher. The background was not as good and so on. So we were winning all the time to start as well. So
that's nice.
But coming back to what you were saying, the 70s, yes, Córdoba is the second city of Argentina. Argentina is divided by states, like United States. So you have the number one state is Buenos Aires. And the capital, where the capital is, Buenos Aires, the capital of the country. The second state is Córdoba. And the capital of the Córdoba state is Córdoba City. So it was in Córdoba City. So Córdoba City is, Che Guevara was born there, for example, to give you an idea.
Famous revolutionary, famous...
Very, very, very famous.
Left-wing man.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the things that happened in Argentina, a lot of the things start in Córdoba. Why? Because we have a very, very famous... The first university in Argentina, one of the very first in Latin America.
So a place of learning,
yes.
A place of culture,
yes.
A place of education,
yes.
A place which the ruling people don't like sometimes, a place of thinking and ideas.
Absolutely, and I was in university as well. I was in a very social thing, I mean, law.
If I understand it, you lived in a time of kidnappings, bombings,
yes,
to overthrow the state government.
Yes, it was a big upheaval. In fact, in 1969, against the national power, Perón, Juan Domingo Perón, was living in Spain at the time, in Madrid, and he was out of the presidency in Argentina in 54. I had 1 or 2 years old, and he went to Madrid, and he was commanding Argentinian politics, in fact, from there.
From Spain.
From Spain, that's right. The Peronista, very, very strong in Argentina. And in Argentina, we have a military government, a little bit not very clever, say. And so there were a lot of revolt in Córdoba. And now, coming back a little bit to your question, my father-in-law, then he was a colonel in the army, and he was put as a chief of police in Córdoba City. What it means, really, that Perón came back to Argentina, and he was the president of Argentina. So when that happened, it was in Córdoba, it was a democratic government, the Peronistas. But the Peronistas have two wings. One is the very, very right wing, kind of fascist, and the other one was a very, very left wing. And the one in Córdoba was left wing. So in fact, it was quite a problem for Perón. So my father-in-law, he was imposed in the government of Córdoba as the chief of police.
To bring order, to keep people...
To have it in check. But to give you an idea how it was, I was married in 1973, December 1973, at the end, after Christmas. I was married there, and I have presents from Perón, I have presents from the governor of Córdoba, the governor, the vice governor, the minister of justice, everybody, they were in my wedding, December of 73. 2 months later, my father-in-law put all of them in jail and took control of the government. It was a very, very serious incident.
It is.
You can imagine. There were people dead because they were...
They were shot.
They were fighting in the street and so on and so on and so on.
Ozzy, you know, I'm 56 now. Mm. So I grew up in an era when Northern Ireland was difficult and dangerous, and I went there rarely, so I didn't have to live around it. Mm. That's the nearest I can come to understanding your situation. Mm. And I presume you're going to tell me that it wasn't frightening, but it was unstable. It was all you'd ever known. You'd grown up in it. You were, if I don't say your family was powerful, at least you were enchufed. You were in a good position. But compared to how you live today, or how your children and your grandchildren live today, it was the Wild West in behaviour.
It was. Of course, you are 100% right. When I was there, it didn't look that bad, say. But in fact, it was a cold room of... And apart from that, I was in university as well.
Yeah.
So it was all these ideas, the different ideas. And I mean, some of my friends in university disappeared, for example.
Disappeared?
They disappeared, yes.
Which means they were taken and killed.
That's right. To complicate more things, I did the army. I was conscripted.
This was obligatory. You had to do your military?
Yes.
You had to do 1 year?
When you are 20 years old, for 1 year you had to do it. We are 4 brothers. The only one that did the bloody army was me.
because somebody had a word for
because it was in the way they say it, you lose 1 year. That's the point. You are studying, you can study. You are working, you cannot work. So in a lot of ways, you lose 1 year. So my older brother, in fact, he used to play a little bit, and he was quite good. He had a very bad injury in his knee when he was going to go into the army. And the army, at the time, because it's a kind of, you go in a ballot, and he was the Navy. Navy was 2 years, no one. So anyway, he didn't operate himself, and so when he went, the people in the medical said, no, you cannot do it, bye-bye.
So no Navy, no Army because of the injury?
No, my brother, no, because of, yeah. My second brother as well, he had an injury before, he didn't work, so he couldn't put... So.
And the doctors didn't go, oh, like another idealist and another injury. Muy interesante.
No. True. Then.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Ricky is 15 days younger than me, so Ricky was in the same thing.
Ricky Villa.
Ricky Villa. Ricky is a lucky, lucky man. What happened to him? There are certain numbers they don't do the army because depending how many people the army needs, so some people, so from number 10 to 150.
This is the ballot.
It's the ballot.
Maybe you're lucky, maybe you're not.
That's right. So he had the ballot, not army, lucky Ricky.
Then the world is screaming now. They're only listening to this in the future. The world is screaming. What kind of soldier were you?
I did the first part. The first part was the tough part, all the training and so on. So that means
running. Cut?
Completely, like you.
Shaved off?
Shave, yes. Ooh. 100%. Yeah.
For a handsome young man like you with the shapely 1970s haircut, I guess that was a horrible moment.
Oh, it was terrible. And every soldier were trained to... Oh, no.
No me tocas.
At the end of the day, everybody.
Everybody off.
Yes.
You must say, looking now, it looks quite good.
Yes.
You didn't like it at the time.
No, I hated it.
It's really in fashion now.
It was a wonderful experience. Of course, I didn't want to do it, but after being there, the camaraderie, it's incredible. You are in the army and people talk about, it's funny how things work sometimes. People talk about patriotism, talking about the nation and this and that and the other. And maybe a little bit of a Judas, but the only thing that you have to do there was to survive. Not that they were going to kill you, no. But to survive meaning that you have to be there trying to do the less work possible.
It teaches you to be very, very street smart, right?
I was quite street smart, to be honest, already, because I was already playing in the first team. Voluntary to do some kind of dirty work. So they were, say, 10 people. One, in fact, they were not doing one step forward. It was the other one going back. Exactly.
90 people taking one step back.
But the volunteer properly, I said, okay, you just go and sit down there, relax yourself. You bastard, come and you go and clean the toilet. Who was the university educated? Oh, hello, I am here. Okay, you go and clean the toilet.
Toilets again.
Exactly, toilet again. So you have to be I was playing the first thing at the time. So I was the most famous in the plateau thing because I was playing so many games. It was the first time Instituto went to play in Buenos Aires. We played with a big guy. We played against Boca Juniors, River Plate. So it was, for Córdoba, was unbelievable. And of course, I was a very integral part of the team. So I started to go. I did the army, say, from 7 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock. Then I went. I went to my house. I stayed some time to eat in the army because it was not the army. In fact, it was the Air Force because the number again. Great memories. That year was incredible because I did the army. I did the football, of course, training every day, and university as well. So everything. So coming back to the university, this is what maybe saved me because the university, especially in Córdoba, especially law, it was a kind of a cauldron of new ideas. By definition, they were against the government.
The junta.
Against the right wing.
Because you lived in a democratic state.
Yes, of course.
You were in an ancient university, in a legal department where people were thinking about justice, universal justice,
exactly.
Not the law, no. Liberty.
They were talking about liberty, they were talking about justice, they were talking about democracy.
And then in all seriousness, to go back, because just so that people understand, that's why some of your friends disappeared and were killed.
Yes.
And when you said, what saved me, maybe?
Football saved me because I was very, very pro. I was very in my ideas.
You had the same ideas as the people who disappeared.
Yes.
But you can imagine, without proving it, somewhere upstairs, somebody who might have said, take that guy too, they went, no, okay, he's a footballer.
I didn't express my idea. Because I didn't have time. I didn't have time to be in university and to be a member of a party, maybe a Labour Party. I didn't have time, so I didn't do it. I was, mentally, I was, my ideas were with them, yes, but I never expressed it, or I never have time.
Eventually, did you clash with your father-in-law, or did you just keep quiet?
No. My father-in-law was very, very right-wing.
Yeah.
And no, I never clashed. I just came here. What happened is after, when he did that in 73, 74, February 74.
He organized the push against democracy.
Right. So what he should have done from the law point of view, it should be the national government should put him in jail, take control of the state, restore the authorities, the governor and so on. That is from the law point of view. And he who had to go in jail for what he did was sedition. It's called sedition. But of course, the national government...
There are people in jail in Catalonia right now for 10, 15 years for sedition.
Yes, that's right.
And Scotland is resisting sending Ponsetti back to Catalonia for sedition.
Yes.
It's a very ancient term.
Of course.
Treason against the state, more or less.
To give you an idea, that was a lot, lot more worse because, say, in Catalonia, at the end of the day, nobody died. It was basically because it was a vote and, okay, that was illegal, blah, 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 blah. But in the Argentina point of view, he just went there and he went to, you're in jail, the proper government of the state.
No process of law.
No process. All of you in jail and so on, I take control now and so on. So that is very, very kind of textbook sedition, say.
I'm going to hop here because, like, say, Tarantino might do in Pulp Fiction, we have to change chapters and come back.
Yeah.
Because naturally now I could speak about Kempes and El Flaco and Huracán. Going to a title-winning team in Buenos Aires. But it's funny when you have a good conversation, and I knew this would be a good conversation, because you're smart, you put up with me, we've proven that before.
I'm a lucky man, I told you.
But talking like this explains to me the answer to the question I'm going to ask you now, because when you came to England first, you had very little knowledge of England, very little knowledge of Tottenham Hotspur, very little English. And we've been told by a teammate of yours that on day one at the training, when you and Ricardo are there and training is finished, there wasn't the kind of player care that there is now with player liaison officers who say,
no,
hello, foreign players that are really important to us. Let us take you back to your home and make sure you're happy. At the end of training on day one, they kind of just tip you out into the London streets in a Ford Cortina. Is that more or less how it happened? You left your own devices?
One, it wasn't a Ford Cortina. It was a bit much better than that, but it's not very good anyway. We arrived with Ricky, and Ricky was, Ricky, I mean, if Ricky had to come in his own, he would never have come in his own. He didn't want to come, Ricky. I was definitely, yes, I convinced Ricky to come because I love it.
He was your roommate.
Yes, because of all the thing that was happening in Argentina, I was starting to feel very, very uncomfortable. I wanted, and after winning the World Cup, I thought, I already said I wanted to carry on playing in Europe. I wanted to come to, not in England, I mean Europe. Europe is, yes. For me...
Maybe Barcelona, Madrid.
It was...
Milan.
Spain, Italy, and France, in that order, as simple as that. Italy, England, there was no one single player, so not even coming to the equation. So anyway, but coming back to your question, we arrived with Rick. I knew a lot of things about England already. I knew because of my education. I knew the capital, London. So it was, when it was London, I was very, very happy. Very, very happy. No, it was not another city, say. It was London, the capital. And Ricky, we had the first training, and Ricky was pulling my... Yeah, Ricky, what happened? What happened to you? He said, this team is fucking crap.
Pelotazos, no?
Yes. No, but it was bad as well. I mean, even Pelotazo were not very good.
they didn't even kick the long ball.
It was very, very typically... this is something that Keith Wilkinson never was very economical with the truth, to put it like that. I mean, never told me that the team was coming from the second to the third.
They just got promoted, didn't they?
He did. Maybe that would tip the balance for me not to come.
Yeah.
Because... after winning the World Cup, I wanted to carry on winning things, being in a proper team, and so on. And if, by definition, you are from the second division to the third division, you're going to be struggling.
Yeah.
And the team was the third from the second division to be promoted. I mean, we were number one candidate to go down. And the team was a second division team that suddenly started to play in the third division. So
and first game of the season is 4-1 against... against Villa, 4-1 defeat.
The first game was, yes, Nottingham Forest away, 1-1, incredible, because they were the champion of Europe, Robertson, Archie Gemmill, Gary Birtle, brilliant team.
Stick with the Scots, that was really good. I'm glad you picked the two Scottish guys first.
yes.
Robertson could play.
We may talk about the World Cup as well after. Scotland there.
Willie Johnson,
phew. I mean, that was... I am talking about everything, but that was an extraordinary team. I remember the manager saying we are going to win the World Cup. If I was the manager of this team, I would say exactly the same thing. Souness, Dalglish, and the best of Liverpool, the best of Manchester United, Jordan, Macari, Martin Beckham.
Born in Aberdeen.
The best.
Aberdeen Cup winner in 1970. Ozzy, I love you even more.
Steve Archibald. No,
not nearly.
Steve was after. But... The top of the cream of Celtic or Rangers, it was Nottingham Forest, Robertson, Archie Gemmill, and so on. Brilliant. Anyway, I'm talking.
But how did you even? Because let's be honest, in Argentina, 1978, just like the rest of the world, there's no internet.
No.
I refuse to believe that Argentine television was. And now an update from the Scottish camp.
Yeah.
Which I think we were in Córdoba. We certainly played in
you
Córdoba.
You were definitely... No, you were based in Córdoba.
Based in Córdoba.
In fact, you were based in Córdoba. It's a little town just outside Córdoba, only 20 miles, Altagracia. That is very nice, very beautiful place, and with lakes and...
Altagracia literally means high beauty, high grace, your holiness.
Yes.
We picked the wrong place then. Literally.
Well, you were in the hotel, big hotel. There was a casino there as well. So anyway,
we should have won the World Cup. I'm glad you said it, not me.
Yes. Maybe. Forget about Scotland for a moment. And so,
Chigwell, you're up.
Oh,
in...
yes, we're right.
It's training session one. This team is crap.
Yes. And I said, Ricky, you're fucking right as well. I mean, basically, unluckily, we have Glenn Hoddle and Steve Perriman. The rest it was very clearly a second division team. So it was incredible what we did from there. I mean, this first year, we finished middle of the table. Mm-hmm. It was an extraordinary accomplishment. Mm-hmm. Extraordinary. Immediately we played against Aston Villa. Aston Villa were a very good team at the time. They were a champion the year after.
European champions, 81.
That's right. Brilliant. So they beat us 4-1 at home. And then we went to Liverpool. They beat us 7-0. And So things were incredibly bad. Ricky, I remember Saturday we play Liverpool and they beat us 7-0. And Saturday we have our lesson, but Ricky was just married, so the lesson were all the time in my house. He lived next door, so sometimes he will come, sometimes he won't come, or sometimes he will come, say hello, bye-bye, disappear. Okay, no problem.
He had other things to keep him happy.
Yes, that's right. Well, yes, me too, but I had to learn English as well. So we had a teacher, Matthew, lovely, lovely man. And then we played Liverpool 7-0, and Monday was Keith Bookinger always did a kind of meeting, all the players there and so on. And I already knew that Ricky lived in another world, always did kind of, this is about his personality. So I said to Ricky this day, Monday, we are going to go early, and you just follow me, okay? Okay. No problem. So he was there, say, with the blackboard, and Keith was there. So we sit in the very back. So when we early in the very back. When we went in the very back, all the senior players were there already. So all the junior one here. But of course, Keith will ask question. He will ask, what do you think of? And of course, he will ask the senior player. Not going to be asking the kids. The Keith will
the ask, kids are quiet. The
So everybody was looking at the floor. Nobody said anything. And Keith said, well, anybody want anything to say? And nobody. And Ricky said, I said, shut the fuck up, Ricky. Don't say anything. No, Ossie, I want to say something. And Keith said, excuse me, Ossie, Ricky want to say something? I said, yes, of course. So Ricky stand up like that. Not a lie, 100%. He stand up like that, and he said, Ricky, what do you want to say? Say what you want to say. And he said, the cat is under the table. And everybody went, it was incredible. And nobody could laugh as well. Because
the cat was under the table.
The cat is under the table. He learned it. The That's the only thing he knew about English. The cat is... So, everybody... This is.
I love it even more.
That show you how we were playing at the time. That is when serious conflict, serious. Ricky was with this thing, for example, because well, footballistically we were playing American, South American style, English style, something in the middle,
a big mix.
Yeah, we wanted definitely demanding the ball. Ricky was not touching the ball at all. He didn't touch the ball.
Because maybe it's because always going over him.
They
or...
didn't give the ball because Ricky was all the time kind of risky in the way he played and so on. So they don't pass the ball to him. So Ricky had a terrible, terrible time the first 2.5 years at the beginning. Ricky, when coming 1981, for example, Ricky was, for example, my contract, they multiplied by 3, my contract. His contract was, the improvement was 10%. Mm. He knew, of course, this is it. So he was going. This is how bad he was. Of course, he scored the goal and then he 5 times more or whatever. Anyway.
He scored the goal, but...
He scored the goal and then...
In the first part of the final, he's really unhappy because I don't know if it's the nerves or the ball doesn't go for him or it's just a bad day.
Exactly. If you know Ricky, if you know, for example, you ask any Ciperriman or all the boys there, know Ricky. Well, with Ricky, you never knew. You never, ever knew. I was his room partner all the time. I didn't know if he was going to have a good game or a bad game. Ricky will play absolutely brilliant. I have seen him play in certain games, for example, for Argentina, that if Maradona played in that way, Maradona would be very, very proud of playing in that way. He was so, so good. So extraordinarily talented. In the other hand, I have seen Ricky play certain games that I said, is he a professional player? He cannot be a professional player.
I don't want to make the comparison too close, but if you think about his physical shape then and what he could do with his body, there were things that reminded me between Waddle and Ricky because the balance, the idea, the technical skill. Also, I mean, he's at this age now, he isn't the physical specimen he was then. Mm. But for somebody to have such balance and grace in that size was a little bit unusual.
It was brilliant. But after saying that, I mean, the first 2 years, the team didn't give him the ball. For me, it was a little bit different because somehow I can win the ball back, so I started to play and so on. And in fact, I didn't give the ball to Ricky. He won't touch the ball. As simple as that.
You had to supply Ricky? Or...
Well, I was... Yeah.
The other guys wouldn't? Mostly.
No, the defender, for example. When I go back to the defender, we're starting to demand the ball, especially with Glenn, to the central defender, to the right back, left back, hey, don't kick it. Don't. So we impose our way of thinking. Of course, it was... Basically, it was Glenn and me. At the time, we were the two most important players.
And Keith allowed you to reshape the idea of the team because...
Well, he was very happy.
But not every... Because he's a hard man, Brackenshaw. People forget.
Yes.
Tough Yorkshireman.
Yes.
And most people in that position, even if the guy, you or Glenn, are good, they feel challenged. Mm. But he knew it was to his benefit because that's a little bit unusual in life.
It was very, very clever to allow us, and then we became the most beautiful team to watch, and he had all these acclamations, and how he has changed football and so on. But like I said, it wasn't, basically it was Glenn and me, and he allowed this to happen and so on. Keith was, after that, when I went to West Bromwich Albion, for example, he was my assistant manager, so... And we used to clash a lot of time because I wanted to play everything from the back. Start playing as well. Oh, no, that is too much. And so, no compromise. Definitely, we're going to play from the back. That, to give you an idea. So he wasn't very, very happy sometimes with it. But Glenn and me, we will not lose the ball anyway. So he started to see the results. Mm. And then in 2 or 3 years later, when Archibald and Crooks arrived, they were the...
A proper partnership.
They were the icing on the cake because all the teams have already started to improve. Chris Hughton, Tony Galvin, Grant Robert, Steve Perryman right back. So all the team is starting to improve. But we needed somebody up front. And then the two of them arrived and they were brilliant. They complemented each other extremely well and they were super players.
There was a good guy in that team, that squad, who didn't get enough games because of you and Glenn. And when I listened to him in Barcelona last season, up on stage talking to people, and somebody said to him, Mickey Hazard, of all the players, of every player that you would take and put in the modern Spurs, who would you choose? Mm. And he chose you.
Well, I would be very... I would chin him if he didn't pick me, yes.
You would chin him. I don't think it was fear that made him choose you.
No.
I think it was love and respect. He's a tough guy too.
Yes. Mickey was an exceptional player. He's absolutely exceptional. Exceptionally talented. I will say it was not a lot of difference between him and Glenn Hoddle in terms of pure talent.
I'm glad you said that.
Yes.
I adored watching
Mickey. Oh, brilliant.
I adored.
Mean, 1984, he was our best player. Glenn and me, we were injured. He was he took control of everything. Brilliant, absolutely.
And a guy coming to a new environment, like not from Argentina, but coming from the Northeast and finding it hard to, I don't know. He talked about it being culturally difficult for a man from the Northeast to come to London.
Well, now he's more a Londoner than a Sunderland, so yeah. He's a very close friend of mine, yeah.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true. Graham Hunter. And Backpage. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.